Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, guys? Welcome back. Welcome to the show.
We also have a special guest.
Yeah. Hey.
Hey.
Hi. How's it going?
Do
I introduce myself? I'm Josh Kim.
Hey, Josh Kim.
I host a show called All Chat for League of Legends, Riot Games, and I also play Magic.
Is that a game that people play?
Yeah, something like some people.
Okay.
There's a handful.
Okay, just like
a very big
seven?
Handful, like a hundred handed,
like seven
giant handful.
So yeah,
welcome to the show, man. Welcome. It's your first time. This is this episode 105 or something like that. It took us 105 episodes to get you in here.
Nice.
I think it's 105.
It was all a build up for me.
So for people who don't, you are also recently, and it's part of our new segment that we're not going to do every episode, but you were partially recently in the Commander 2016 Out of the Box by the Command Zone video.
Yes,
you were the four reality star esque. Yeah. Stars of that show.
I was really happy to be invited to do that. Commander 2016, great product. It was a lot of fun to record that, and it was super fun.
So you have an infectious laugh. There's one shot where they just pan to you and you just laugh. That's like it's literally what you do. Either like it's like and it was like one of those great reality TV moments where it's like somebody talks, somebody says something clever, and they cut to you, and then you just start giggling. I was like, oh yeah, this is just like it is on TV.
I guess that'll be the beginning of our news segment. For those who don't know, The Command Zone, our sister podcast, and also joint collected.company, the website podcast members, released an awesome video last week called Commander 2016 Out of the Box, where they basically did a mini reality television show where the two hosts, Jimmy and Josh, Josh here, and second Josh, and then also Craig Blanchett, who has been on this cast before and is an often guest on the Command Zone, did like a reality television show version of them playing two games with just the box, those decks out of the box.
Yep.
And it's really good. You can find it on YouTube, and it'll be linked probably in the little show notes somewhere in this episode. Second piece of news. And this is the more big one, is a Standard Showdown.
Yeah, it was a big announcement. Just happened.
Should I explain it, or do you guys know?
Oh, go ahead. We were actually just chatting about it off mic, but I mean, introduce it, we can talk about it.
All right, I'll read the literal announcement. From November 26th through December 17th, stores around the world will be able to host Standard Showdown tournaments on Saturdays with special promotional prize boosters earned through undefeated play and other means as determined by each store. The tournament will be Swiss events meant to showcase the Standard format. Stores will receive 40 prize boosters, 10 for each event, that will contain 3 cards each. These boosters will contain a premium card from a current legal standard set, including Zendikar Expeditions and Kaladesh Inventions, not including Double Face cards. 2 non-premium cards that are either a rare or a mythic rare from a set currently legal in standard, Battle from Zendikar through Kaladesh. Zendikar Expeditions and Kaladesh Inventions appear in roughly 1 in 33 boosters. It'll be in English.
So
the announcements
things.
Get way less epic, so I'm no longer using my sweet voice.
So a couple things about this. I'm always for Wizards coming up with cool new competitive like things that they introduce. I think
right.
It's fun. I think one of the things that we've learned, we talked about this last week a little bit, that with them changing rotation policies and things like that, they're always willing to try new things out, and they don't seem to be very shy about walking things back or just throwing out something new at us, as long as they're not like distinctly violating something they've promised. Now, in this case, there is something going on that they didn't promise they wouldn't do, but with there being expeditions and inventions in these packs, I think it's a little bit of an eye roll. Like, I think there was a lot of people who felt like those pieces of product were very exclusive, and it was exciting and cool to know that you only could get them this one time, though they didn't promise we would never see them again. So it's not like one of those things where they violate anything, but I think that's the only cause for concern here for me. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, well, first thing is that I think they're obviously trying to push people to standard competition. That's awesome. For people who bought into the expedition hype the first time around, they're probably like, oh, why did I do that? Because now the inventions came out, and you're like, okay, well, maybe I'm still safe, and now the Standard Showdown thing. And so I know some of the finance guys have been talking about how expeditions, they still haven't seen their bottom yet, because we just have no idea how often they're going to do something like this with a promotion by putting more expeditions into the market or whatever. So,
well, it's kind of like Eternal Masters also getting a reprint. I think Wizards realizes they have these things that build hype, and they're not going to not use these tools in their tool chest to kind of make things exciting.
Is that tool chest the same as a toolbox?
Yes.
tool chest.
One you find in caves, and one you just keep around.
Okay.
Like one you have to find chests.
But Kessler is less likely to use the phrase
and
tool chest.
Da, 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 and then you open an expedition.
The next time you talk about Trinket Mage, will you please use the phrase tool chest?
You should take this Mox Oval. You'll need it. I don't know. I forgot the line. Man, that was a terrible reference. I mean, like, it's not going to be that many. I mean, it'll be some, but it's one in every 33 packs. There's 4 weekends total where these will be open, and they're not going to open, like, infinity of them. So I feel like, yes, they're going to be reprinting these, but these aren't. And, like, the other 2 cards are mythics.
Yeah.
Rare or mythic.
Right now I see an Emrakul, a Gideon, and a Mox Opal.
That's obviously what you're supposed to open, right?
Yeah, every one of these that I'm going to open with the standard deck that I don't have.
Oh, Gideon's going to go down, huh?
Here's what I think.
I guess.
Here's what I think. You talk about with expeditions or with masterpieces, which are the cards that people care the most about, right? Like, which are the ones that matter? And the bottom line is that the cards that people care a lot about out of those opens are not going to tank, even if they put a few more into the market, because they're lands and extremely rare cube cards that are, like, legal and vintage. The ones that are, like, less desirable to begin with will go down a little bit, but they weren't that expensive in the first place. So it's really what it comes down to is, like, if you're going to talk about the price difference before versus after this of, say, a Misty Rainforest or a Scalding Tarn, in a year, unless they just continually reprint that card, which I don't expect they will, it'll just be high again because people love those cards.
As the owner of a foil Scalding Tarn, my foil Scalding Tarn's price has not depreciated due to the fact that expeditions are around.
Right.
Like, there is still something about having that. And if you have expeditions, they might go a little bit down. But, like, you were just talking about this earlier because you're the deck that we're going to be deck teching today, you're kind of foiling out because of expeditions. You need 4 of those.
Yeah.
Like, maybe some of the treasures, or what are they called?
Inventions?
Masterpieces?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Or whatever. They might depreciate a little bit because they're more special in singleton formats, or even in vintage if they're seeing play. Mm-hmm. They're a one of. But even, like, Mox Opal, that's a modern staple, and I know people that would foil out their Infinity decks. So,
I think it's funny that they omit the cards from Oath of the Gatewatch, I guess.
That was my question. I don't think they are.
It says right there, cards from Oath of the Gatewatch and Double Face cards are not included. I don't know what that's about.
So buy your strip mines, everybody.
I guess. Or the Wastelands?
Wastelands, yeah. But they got reprinted, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they're just tanked.
So
it is funny that they're omitting those cards.
Are we complaining that Magic is less expensive for people?
I think I said when I said the phrase concern, it's not a concern in the sense that, like, I think Wizards is doing something wrong. I'm just talking about when you look at the net positive, like the gain out of something like this versus what you gain out of this is more people playing Standard. You gain another competitive format, something fun you can do at your LGS. That's awesome. All those things are great. Even the prizes they're talking about are great. I think the only thing to discuss in terms of whether or not this is news that we should pay attention to is the fact that modern cards that are heavily sought after at a high price point may change in value because of it.
Well, but we've been asking for that for a year at least, if not the entire length of this entire podcast, which is 100 X episodes.
True.
10 episodes at this point. So, like, you know, the professor was on earlier this year, and that's actually a great episode where he talked about, like, what can Wizards do to kind of lower this problem, and reprints is the main thing, and this is another creative way they've come up with to do this. Like, this could be a seasonal thing where next season they'll have, you know, for a different standard one, and then over the summertime they'll do a modern version of this. And I think that's not even very likely. I'm gonna shot call that right now. We're gonna see a modern showdown over the summer or spring, depending on.
That will be sweet.
Right. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Where it's the expeditions from whatever the most recent set in Kaladesh plus, like, the new sets.
Would they be able to, if they did, like, a modern showdown, would they be able to get away with just, like, printing modern staples in prize packs?
You know what it is? It's mythic rares and rares from Modern Masters 2017 plus expeditions, and probably one, like, standard legal mythic rare or rare. Like those, like something around those lines.
I mean, it'd be awesome if they did something like that. I'll tell you that
Flare,
much.
Like maybe it'd be like Flare because it's like a standard
card.
Well,
like look at Modern Masters, the last one, like of the rares, how many of them do you really want right now?
Yeah, very few. Yeah.
So, like, it's still cool, and you're still getting sweet rares and stuff, but it's still a spread of value that, you know, sometimes you'll get the Tarmogoyf, but sometimes you'll get a rare that I'm not remembering.
Comet Storm.
There we go.
Here's my final comment, and then I want to move on from this, is that the hilarious part about any kind of reprint discussion about any sought-after card that is expensive or awesome is this. It always is a point of discussion before it happens and while it's happening. Flash forward 2 years, we all look back at that, and nobody remembers where the reprint card came from. Nobody really remembers like where they got the card from. The prices of sets don't really change anymore since they screwed up with Chronicles, and like, it's always balanced out. Like, Wizards does a great job with it. It's really, they very, very rarely tank the value of something right. you care about. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's just because like Magic is growing at such like a rapid, rapid pace right now.
Speaking of reprints, next piece of news.
Okay.
Imperial Seal is printed as a foil judge promo.
I saw that. It's exciting for all of those people. Those few of us that play foil Highlander Roulette, man.
Yeah.
I can now add it to my foil blue white EDH. Nope, I can't. But it's cool. I'm excited. I'm excited for the specific reason you said, and I'm guessing the rest of the world's excited because they can get a second Vampiric Tutor in the deck.
Here's the real question, guys. When the heck are we going to get a foil Worldly Tutor? Like, how many years are we going to have to wait before they give us the... Like, I don't even get it. We've had multiple printings now of foil Enlightened Tutor, foil Vampiric Tutor, and foil Mystical Tutor, yet we can't get a foil Worldly Tutor. They gave us Imperial Seal in foil before they gave us Worldly Tutor.
Do you think they're saving it for, like... future from the vault or something?
Maybe. World Leader got printed as an uncommon reprint in 6th edition. Like, how has that not been reprinted yet? No.
How has Damnation not been reprinted yet?
Also,
that one hurts.
Yeah. All right. Next on our list, and this is a little bit more exciting because you actually have experience with this deck, White Green Tron. And it's mislabeled as Red Green Tron, but White Green Tron won SCG Modern Open Columbus.
Yeah, this is kind of funny because I used to play Green White Tron before I started playing Green Red Tron, because mainly I didn't want to buy the Grove of the Burn Willows. And so sure. I had just stuck with Green White Tron because it gives you access to Path, and your sideboard is pretty sweet, actually.
It's got three Blessed Alliance.
So
two
sweet.
Rest in Peace, two Thrag Tusk, one Ravenous Trap.
Oh, wow.
Three Warping Whale.
Yes.
Some Nature Claims and a Ghost Quarter.
So basically in Tron, a lot of people have been moving to having main deck Lightning Bolts instead of the random sweepers that you'd find in Tron, like
Pyroclasm.
Pyroclasm, Fire Spout, that sort of thing. And people have been moving towards... just ways to get rid of infect creatures is basically the
sure.
you know, and so but the problem with that though is that if you're facing down something like Reality Smasher, right, that Lightning Bolt looks really, really bad in your hand,
right.
so
Path is just kind of the natural progression.
Yeah,
from that.
I think Path seems like a really, really good place to be currently. People have been talking about how Bant Eldrazi is probably the best deck in the format, so having a clean answer to that seems really good. And Blessed Alliance, also really good Magic card.
I mean, Bant Eldrazi got two into that top eight this last weekend. The other competitors were Dredge was second place, Affinity in third, Grixis Delver in fourth, Naya Burn in fifth, two Bant Eldrazi decks at sixth and seventh, and then Jund in number eight.
Yeah.
So definitely what's cool about this is it's very different looking than GP Talos, where GP Talos was purely like four infect decks, three control decks, and Dredge.
right.
So it's cool that this has such a large variety, even though we do have double Bant Eldrazi, but there's no infect decks in this list.
Yeah, it's actually surprising. How far do you need to go down before you see the first infect list? Pretty far.
Wow.
21st.
Yeah. And then 22nd. And then Amulet.
And then 24th.
You got a Lantern Control fairly high.
But
there.
Then Madcap Moon.
Yeah.
Madcap Experiment with Blood Moon. Seems
yeah,
sweet.
It's really sweet.
All right.
Quick question before we move on from this. There's two copies of Bant Eldrazi in the top eight here. Do we think that deck is going to continue as just like a mainstay competitor? Is it too good? Like I
definitely don't think it's too good. It hasn't won anything, and it's just a bunch of beefy dudes that aren't like it's definitely very good. Ooh, it's running a Johnny Mentor Heroes. That's
oh,
so
wow.
sick.
I've never seen that.
Sweet.
gain 100 life emblem or ultimate. I think it's definitely very good.
Right.
And it'll be a staple of the format, but I don't currently think it's oppressive.
Okay, fair enough.
I think Infect's more impressive than this is.
So I play a lot of blue decks in Modern, and Bant Eldrazi is my worst nightmare mainly because of Cavern of Souls. That card
sure.
is brutal, and I feel like as long as Bant Eldrazi exists, blue control decks are going to have a hard time pressing into the format.
Okay. That's a fair enough point. I mean,
because your standard stuff for removal just doesn't work against 5/5 tramplers who make you discard a card just for targeting it. And yeah, I don't know. I think Banned Eldrazi is really good. I think the one major weakness, and a lot of people have pinpointed this, is the fact that their mana base is so greedy, right? Because they're basically running four colors,
right?
If you consider colorless a color. So yeah, the Blood Moon is a pretty good answer to a lot of the stuff that they're doing. But yeah, still, I think this deck is quite clearly a very, very strong deck in the format.
Sweet. Yeah, I guess I just wonder, because we've had that conversation before about decks that will pop up as like a one over two of in top eights in competitive tournaments, being like, oh, it's not too good, it's not too good. And then all of a sudden, there's a conversation where it's like, this is just really oppressive and not fun to play against. Like, I guess the idea that this deck has a decent chance of getting out turn two Thoughtnotseer, like mm-hmm. a lot of games, is the part of it that to me is like, I wonder if at a certain point this is just not fun.
It's just Modern's version of Shops. I think that's, I mean, maybe it becomes more impressive and another guard needs to be taken out of the deck. But I think for now, I think it's fine.
Yeah, and it doesn't greatly concern
like,
me.
If I were to pick decks that are problematic to the format, Dredge and Infector, obviously, I think way worse.
Yeah.
Like, for the format.
Yeah.
As much as I love Dredge and I'm fine with Infect losing.
Yeah, I'm just salty as a blue player that Cavern of Souls exists. Let's put it that
sure.
way.
Sure. You got to run four Ghost Quarters in
yeah,
the main. That's
I wish I could.
Yeah.
I wish I could.
All right. So I think that is the news for today.
All right.
Cool.
We did record last week's episode pretty late into the week, and this is pretty early into the week, so we didn't have as much of a week of stuff to talk about.
And not every week we have like crazy magic news.
What's his face? Got his cards back. Or he didn't get cards back. So the football player from
Cassius
the
Seattle.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't get his cards, but Wizards donated to him a bunch of product and then kind of also donated that same amount to some charities.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show.
Okay, that yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, if anything, it's another reminder, do not leave your cards in your car.
Yes. Yes.
Even if you are on the Seahawks team, even if you are an NFL player.
Or I guess if you will, like valet.
Yeah, or
have a guy watch it for you.
I have no idea, man.
Yeah, super, super annoying. I said it on the cast last week. I had a car broken into in high school and lost two, like, you know, 3-inch thick binders with all my lands and gold cards. Several $1,000 of the cards, and that really sucked to have to recover from. So, anyway, let's continue to move through the episode.
All right, so before we get into the actual subject matter, we want to remind everyone to follow us on Twitter. We are at the MMCast. I am at Kes Wiley.
I am at Ben Bateman Media.
And I'm at Zell Tweets.
And as well, you should check out our Patreon. It is at patreon.com/TheMMCast. You can donate, and it helps us kind of do all the stuff that we're doing. We have 100 episodes, and it's being paid for partly by that Patreon, and it also helps us do YouTube videos, which is the next thing we're going to bring up. So you should go to our YouTube channel as well, which is youtube.com/TopDeckingTV, and you can watch video versions of this that'll have the cards show up when we mention them, and it'll have deck lists, and it'll have weird things making fun of us as we're talking or stumbling about stuff. That's pretty great. And then we want you to remind you we're now on collected.company. So previously we were on rocketjump.com. We are now on www.collected.company. We share that website with the Command Zone, and it's going to be a new exciting place to find Magic content, so you guys should check that out as well.
Totally. Yeah, I think that pretty much sums up the shout-outs for now.
Let's talk about the thing we're going to talk about. Today we're talking about Magic coverage, so partly because Josh here has plenty of experience in the world of esports, is also very experienced recently, especially, but in general and career-wise, in the esports arena, and I personally watch Twitch probably once in a while. So
what I want to jump in with and say and redefine the topic of conversation, because we've had actually variations of these conversations on the cast before, if you guys have listened. It goes a little beyond just coverage. I think coverage is part of it. I think the other part of it is it's clear that Magic is not sort of officially an esport. Magic is sort of like a fringe esport. I think that's kind of agreed upon by most. We've talked to a lot of pros about this. Paul Rietzel recently had a conversation with us about this. I did a piece for Machinima at GPLA where we spoke with LSVU and a few other people about it. The real question is Magic the next esport? If not, why not? And is coverage the problem? I think that's like really what the whole conversation comes down to. Coverage being a part of it, but I think ultimately there's confusion by a lot of people in a game that boasts 22 to 30 million players worldwide. At least 10% of that is tournament play. So you have over 2 million people that are playing this game competitively worldwide. Why has it fallen so far behind? I think, and the other question being, its most similar competitor being Hearthstone, why was Hearthstone able to sort of come in and just become that game for people?
Yeah. So I kind of wanted to first talk about my credibility because I've lived with Team Curse and Team Liquid for a year, and I produce content for them. And so I'm deeply in the esports scene or whatever, and I have good friends.
For those who don't know, who are Team Curse and Team Liquid?
So Team Curse and Team Liquid are League of Legends pro, they're pro teams in the League of Legends scene. And now Team Liquid has expanded into, you know, well, Team Liquid... Okay, that was Team Curse is a League of Legends team that got bought out by Team Liquid, who has traditionally had teams in StarCraft, and they have now picked up smashers like Hungrybox, and they've kind of expanded their repertoire into a lot of different esports. And I was with them during that transition when they did that, and so I have a lot of information about esports, and you know, I've been thinking about the same thing about why Hearthstone instead of Magic, which a lot of people, you know. You would ask someone like Brian Kibler about why are you a pro in Hearthstone instead of Magic, and why are you doing that? And the answer is that Hearthstone coverage is better, but also it's just more accessible to a lot of people. And I think there's a lot of things keeping Magic back from ever competing with Hearthstone on that level.
Right, and similar, we talked about this earlier before we started recording. That's why I was like, wait, we should talk now. Yeah. But if you ask Kibler, if you ask pretty much anyone, Magic is a better game
yes.
than Hearthstone.
I think no one can argue with that. And if you talk to Hearthstone pros about that, you know, there's a lot of people who complain about the way Hearthstone is made, and especially for competitive gamers. And there's no secret to why that is. And one of that is because a lot of people feel that Hearthstone luck is a higher percentage of games than it needs to be. You can't interact with your opponent on their turn. These are things that make Magic a really interesting game that I think... It's just mechanically more, I don't know how to say this, but it's
diverse
better.
Depth.
Yeah. There's more
fair,
depth to it.
Yeah.
I also think, to quickly comment on that comment about if you talk to pros, that they say Magic is a better game.
Mm-hmm.
I think that should be qualified for just a second, because there, obviously, when you use that term better, there's a lot of qualifiers, right?
Right.
There's the sheer numbers that are playing Hearthstone. There's the fact that at the highest competitive level, there are more people playing Hearthstone. There's the fact that there's a much larger audience following
right.
competitive Hearthstone, and the fact that the payouts for Hearthstone tournaments are much higher. So I think I will acknowledge, and most will acknowledge, that it's a much more satisfying game and a much more complex game.
Well, I think when you say better game, it's
yeah.
the same way you say better movie.
Sure.
It doesn't necessarily mean more popular movie. Like,
right,
I would
right,
say
sure.
that... a Marvel movie is going to be way more popular than The Arrival from this last weekend, but The Arrival is inherently a better movie than most
well,
Marvel
we can,
movies.
Well, we can talk about the popularity, because I think that's a really interesting point, because Hearthstone is online, and as a lot of people know, Magic the Gathering Online, the client is really, really hard to deal with. It is not very accessible for new players. And I think one of the things that a lot of people don't talk about enough is that Magic has multiple formats that you can compete in. And that automatically makes it harder, I think, for people to have a clear entry point into the competitive scene. Whereas Hearthstone, it's quite clear. They've just introduced their own standard thing. But I think for the most part, for Hearthstone's existence, they've just had one format, which was use the cards that are available to you and
yeah.
build a deck.
Well, right. Now there's Arena, there's Wild, there's like all these different ways you can play it.
Yeah, there's different ways to play it, but there's not actually a competitive arena scene. There's no official way to track your stats. I think most of the streamers who stream Arena, I'm good friends with Hafu, for example, you just have to go into Excel and record your wins based off of how you did, you know, and that's how they stat track. There's no official system yet in Hearthstone that tracks how good you are at Arena, and so players do it on themselves, and so there's no arena competition. There's no competition that you can enter in and be like, I want to be a professional arena player. Like in Magic, that the equivalent to that would be, I want to be a professional limited player. Well, that exists in Magic, but it does not exist for Hearthstone.
Sure.
So Hearthstone, the competitive scene is much more focused. It's heavily driven into one format. And I think that hinders Magic a little bit, because I think one of the access points for Magic is that there's so many formats for everyone. You know, some people might want to play Commander, some people want to play Modern, you know, some people want to play Standard, and a lot of people just want to play kitchen table Magic and disregard what the competitive scene does.
Well, and Magic, it's often said about Magic is a set of rules and game pieces that allow you to play 30 different games.
Right.
Like they all interact together in the correct way, but the way you can change how you play them from Highlander Roulette to Commander to Modern to Standard to Limited to Sealed Limited versus Draft Limited to Cube, like And that's like 5%, I think, of the different formats I could name that play Magic, and
right.
we don't have time for that. But I agree that that theoretically does offer a beginning barrier. But I do think one of Hearthstone's greatest strengths is just watchability.
Oh, yes.
Like, what, like from an advertising perspective, and the fact that, A, you can do it on your phone anywhere. Like, that, like, yes, Hearthstone might have more players, but it's the same way that Candy Crush has more players than Call
League
of Duty
Legends.
Or Halo or League of Legends, which, like, yes, but are people designating their lives to that, or are they just playing it because they can play it on the bus?
Right.
Well, like, no, I know very few people that go, oh, I'm going to go hang out with my bros and play Hearthstone tonight. But mm-hmm. And obviously I'm in the Magic community, but there are many people that literally schedule entire evenings out of their week or entire weekends towards Magic the Gathering.
So let's jump at it. Let's look at it from a couple different places, right? Let's start the conversation where it sort of should begin, which is that Hearthstone's the obvious competitor, but the conversation is about Magic as an esport, not comparing it to Hearthstone.
Right.
We've had the Hearthstone conversation a number of times.
Sure. And Wizards actually doesn't think Hearthstone is a competitor.
Right. And
officially,
I think a lot of people don't. So let's go to the beginning, and we'll just say that the world of esports right now is exploding. So 5 years ago, why couldn't Magic have been competitive like we wanted it to be? The answer was that there was no such thing. There wasn't a world like this. The world we're in now would actually cater to it. So I guess the first question is, it's not a comfortably online platform for a lot of people. Look, I'm a Mac user. I can't play Modo on my computer without downloading like stuff that is not familiar to me. I've tried it. I've done it. It's annoying.
Oh, yeah. No, I think one of the biggest failings of Modo is not being on Mac.
That's a huge problem. So, but it's been years, and they haven't updated that. They haven't changed that. So that's clearly not on the radar of something they need to change, because it would be done by now. So I guess the first question is, does Wizards want Magic to be an esport?
Well, I think that, and we saw this with the Treasures, I think Wizards is slowly transitioning Modo, because I think the biggest limitation for Modo being an esport is its tie-in to real-life cards. The fact that you're spending actual money to buy these cards, the fact that you like the way you go about playing it is limited by that factor, and they can't kind of change that as long as, what's it called, the trading your cards in for real redemption is available in the game. And I think that's what Treasures was starting to do, is to offer Hearthstone-like or League of Legends-like or Overwatch-like reward systems to slowly move away from the tickets, packs-based economy on the site.
You realize you've been saying Hearthstone for years, right?
I'm never going to stop.
You're never going to stop?
It's never going to happen.
Okay, fair enough.
It's Hearthstone? Oh, yeah, no, I'm going to say
Hearthstone
forever.
It's like internally at Blizzard, it's like a huge, like a nervous tick for them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, people do it.
Cool.
Yeah. Every time you say Hearthstone, a Blizzard employee gets shot.
Yeah.
But, oh, okay. Well, then maybe I'll slip.
Not literally, guys. Not literally.
I have some friends who work there. Okay. But I think that's, like, I think Wizards is moving that in direction. I also just think Hearthstone was made specifically to be more watchable and simpler. Magic the Gathering, because it's a paper game that's being translated into an e-sport or an online platform, doesn't translate the same way.
But physical golf and video game golf are like, it's like, I don't find real golf to be compelling, except that I like to watch it, so it's enjoyable to me. Whereas like video game golf is also like a difficult thing to do, and like people are good at that. That like, but why would people? You know what I'm saying?
I guess my point is actually golf and Magic are obviously the most competitive comparable, and I would say Hearthstone is more like hockey,
sure,
where it's easier to watch because things are happening at all times, and it's easy kind of to understand what's going on. Where
well, one thing I was going to bring up is that Hearthstone was obviously, like you said, designed to be watchable, and Magic existed in a time where esports was not a thing, and so the game wasn't designed in a way that was meant to be, you know, watched on camera, I think. And
right.
I think that's... I mean,
Magic the Gathering was on ESPN2. Thank
yeah,
you very much back
those,
in 95.
I remember those days.
Videos are sweet.
I was really excited as a kid when that happened. I never actually ended up watching any of it, but, you know, that's...
I like
that's,
that it exists.
Yeah. I think that's a problem, though, right? That,
oh, yeah.
Like, it's just Magic, it was not built to be watchable. It was meant to be a game that you play with your friends that was creative and interesting, but it wasn't necessarily designed for a... you know, a spectator.
Right. And part of the argument is it's almost should be, and I'm going to be the defender of Magic, I guess, but it's almost to be commended that they're able to do as much as they can with the medium right. that wasn't meant to be this at all and do anything with
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people point the finger at coverage and they're like, well, we can't read the cards, we can't do this. And the thing is that people adapt and they change. You know, poker is a game that it wasn't meant to be spectated or anything, but they have figured out ways to make coverage watchable.
I'm pretty
right?
sure poker was invented to be spectated by in like oh, saloons really? In the Old West
well,
with like
my
sharpshooters
bad,
and like... girls in corsets. And, yeah.
I mean, look, honestly, okay, I'm there at BlizzCon. I'm watching the Hearthstone Championship, like the World Championship, right? And it's in a hall that's full with, like, I don't know how many people watching, probably
tons.
At least 5,000.
Right.
And you're watching it, and it's this giant stage, and you have the shoutcasters up there. And I'm just looking around. I'm looking at the screen. I'm like, this could easily be Magic. Like, this... They could just be sitting there at a table playing cards as opposed to sitting at computers and like... This could be done. This easily could be done. There's an audience of people that like this. So I don't even necessarily think the fact that it's cardboard that is the only thing holding it back. I think there is some perception. I think Magic, some of its detriment is that it did exist in a time when that wasn't the case. And so now you have... this is a good example for you. So I was editing old footage today, and I interviewed Seth Rogen a few months back, right? One of the questions I had for Seth was about Magic, because a friend of mine's a friend of his. He had his face on a Magic card. So in the interview, I was like, I do this Magic podcast, Seth. And he's like, oh, cool, Magic the Gathering. And I was like, tell me about, you know, playing Magic or whatever. And he's like, yeah, I played Magic a lot when I was a kid. I even went to the factory where they make the cards once in Seattle. It was really cool. And I was like, cool. And he's like, yeah, but I haven't played since like high school. I don't know.
You need a way better Seth Rogen impression
okay.
voice.
I should have a better one. Yes, I definitely need a better Seth Rogen impression. There's no doubt. But the point is, like, when anytime, like, I've had Magic come up in my life, in my professional life outside of just Magic, a few times. That's one of the ones that I can think of where, like, this is somebody who's massively famous. I know for a fact they know what Magic is. This will be fun to ask them. He must have some awareness because he's a huge dork. He, like, talked about it like it was Pogs. He talked about it, do you know what I'm saying? He talked about it like it was something that was so completely off his radar that I think as much as we're in it, that we think it's this huge thing, the word esports to, like, television, ESPN, corporate America is a giant thing right now.
Right.
Magic is not in that conversation for them. That's the biggest problem, is it's not elevated in the same way. You don't have people with money, influence, and power that are paying attention to Magic. And I think that's what holds it back.
I think that the conversation is difficult because there are tons of people who just don't know what esports is in general. And so, like, I don't know in Seth Rogen's case if he knows what League of Legends is and if he knows what the greater esports scene is like. And
True, fair.
So it's hard for me to say that if, you know, if you asked him again, like, what, how do you compare Magic to League of Legends? I don't know what kind of answer you might get. Magic, I think that it can get there, but it just needs some sort of the same kind of sex appeal that Hearthstone has, you know, and
sure.
Hearthstone visually, when you play it, because I played a little bit of Hearthstone. I basically, I climbed up to almost legend and I gave up because the grind was gross, but the game is really satisfying to play, and you cannot say the same thing for Modo. When you play a big giant card in Hearthstone, you know, it stomps its way in. It's like,
right. It explodes and blows something
and
up.
It's awesome. There's this very visceral feeling you get. There's an official game design term for this. I don't know what it is, but Modo lacks that sexiness, and, you know, cardboard lacks that sexiness. There's just a visual appeal to Hearthstone that Magic hasn't get. And that's not to say that Magic can't get there with just cardboard cards. If the stuff that's on the screen directly, just the stuff that's displaying information to you isn't that interesting, maybe the commentators can do something to talk more in depth about the stuff that they're talking. You know, like for example, poker. Poker is my example all the time because I think that there's a lot of ways that coverage-wise, it's very similar. You have cards that are hidden from certain people, and it's the commentator's job to kind of design the story around those poker hands and to tell the viewer what the pros might be thinking at that moment. And I think that currently with what Wizards has done with their coverage, it's not easy to delve into the mind of the people who are playing. And poker does an exceptional job of doing exactly that. You know, they have those like little card readers on the table so you can see what cards are being laid out. And so the commentators are given full information about what's happening on the board. And so they can make informed decisions about what's going on. And I feel like current coverage for Wizards, you can't do that. You listen to the commentators, they talk generally about the matchup, but you can't really, you know, get into the moment because you just from the coverage side of things, you just don't have that information.
What about so let's continue moving. Let's continue moving away from the conversation of what's wrong with it, and more towards the conversation of what do we think are a few things that, in a dream world, like if the resources, time, and money were there to improve Magic as a potential esport, what are the things, the problems to fix? I think the first one that comes to mind for me, shuffling. That's a huge problem. The time involved with having to shuffle and search for a land and reshuffle and take a mulligan. It's not just automated and quick like it is. I think that's the first one for me. So how do you fix that problem? Do you have auto shufflers that people are putting their decks into that are like?
Well, I think you just don't show shuffling. I think you have any time, like it's timeouts. It's timeouts in any sport.
Sure.
Where when shuffling is happening, you cut to the commentators. Like that's an easy. I think when you're doing these coverages, that's just what you have to do. Like you can't cut shuffling out of a collectible trading card game. Like that's, and the older the format gets, the more shuffling is available. And I think Wizards has done a lot of work for Standard to limit shuffling. Like right. You know, fetch lands are something they're only doing because they need it to make it exciting. But for the most part, it's cards that are, you know, look at the top four and do something. That's like kind of what they've moved towards instead of doing shuffling effects. And so they've cut down on that effect. But even with that, like you just use that as timeouts.
So, okay, do you have, so then here's a question for you. This is an interesting one. If the conversation is that in a live match, like a big time match of Magic, and it's, you've got like, let's say that there are fetch lands or something where you're going to shuffle your deck six times in a game. Do you have your commentators on live headset with a TV producer who's watching the game and knows Magic well enough to know, okay, end of this turn, he's going to be shuffling his cards. We're going to cut back to the commentators for approximately 28 seconds. You guys be prepared to go back and have, and they've got their queue up of the things they're going to talk about for those 30 seconds, those increments. So it's like, it's actually like, instead of just like he's shuffling and they just start like talking about, well, you know, what's interesting about this card that he's using is that it can be used in this kind of deck and that kind of, and they're just like making stuff up as they go. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. So I was going to say that, you know, shuffling might be the most boring part about Magic, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's box office poison either. In League of Legends, laning in for most people is super boring to watch. People farming away. Like,
Right.
It's horrible sometimes to watch. And commentators use that time to talk about anything about the game, right? And so, like, I could see, like you said, you know, maybe that's the adaptation is during shuffling, they just cut to the casters and they quickly talk about what happened in that turn and they can talk about what the players are going to be thinking about and what are they setting up to do. Right. Or,
and that's like history of player stuff, too. Like,
yeah.
You can go into, oh, this is LSV versus Owen Turnwall. These are the things that Owen Turnwall and LSV have done in the past that's really impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
totally.
Like League of Legends use that landing phase to be like, oh, this team did this. Or
right.
This is when we're going to show you the weird team documentary we filmed 6 weeks
yeah.
ago.
Or let's
them
talk
preparing
about
it.
The matchup
yeah.
Just in a vacuum. Like, what do you think is going
how
to happen?
How good is this champion versus this champion
right.
setup and what's going to happen?
And, like, and I think you also, like, as somebody, you know, I do live football coverage on Sundays. And I'm a stats guy, and I think it's the kind of things that are interesting is like, okay, when you have a game going on, it's like, you know, Eli Manning is 9 out of 12 with wins versus Cincinnati in his career, you know, with 7 of those coming at home. And it's like, LSV has played Owen Turnwall 19 times. He's won 13 of them on the play. He wins at this percentage of the time. So,
right. Yeah. Forget League of Legends and their laning phase. Look at football.
Yeah.
Football is 15 minutes of play for a 3-hour watching experience.
Yeah.
They fill. What is that? 2 hours and 45 minutes of time with commercials and dialogue about
yeah.
what's going
yeah.
on. Like, if they can do it, we can fill in the like 6 moments of shuffling.
Okay.
I think so. Second on at least my thing, and we mentioned it before. I do think getting Modo away from the association with dollars. I think making it more of a game that you can just pick up and play and earn points, and you spend money maybe to get a bunch of packs. Like, the way that Hearthstone works is you can either grind out drafts and then eventually you win packs through drafting or whatever, or you can buy packs to open them, allows people to pick it up a little bit easier. Right now, if I'm a casual player, I'm not going to pick up Modo.
Right, yeah.
Because, like, it's not great in the first place, but B, it's going to cost me at least $100 just to do anything.
Right, yeah.
I mean, yeah, if we're going to talk about Modo, it was clearly designed in the beginning for Modo to be exactly what you would do with cardboard, but online. And the problem is that direct translation, there's things that you know, get lost in that translation. And I think, they need to rethink how to.
But even Jewels of the Planeswalker is an attempt at being a little bit more of the Heartstone version of it.
Yes.
I think Modo is better than Duel. I mean, maybe that's an unpopular opinion, but the amount of times I've played both, I will play Modo before I play
Duels. I think like Duels 20, which is the one that has the hack? The one that has the hack where people have gone in and they've changed it so that you can play every card ever.
Oh, I didn't know
it's
that.
It's called, is it Duels 2012? There's one of them that has a significant hack. Every single card ever has been loaded into it. You can play like essentially Legacy except with the format of like a Duels.
Oh, wow.
As when I was doing that Machinima thing, one of the guys there was telling me about it. So very small online scene of this. But he was showing it to me and it was just like, this is remarkable. Like how, again, I don't think it's the conversation of they're incapable or they can't come up with it. Because those platforms they've come up with are close.
Well, we've talked about this before. I don't think it's they can't. I think it's they wasted their budget on this for X amount of years on the new client Imodo, and then the company that they hired backed out halfway through, and then so they had to hire in-house teams to finish it. And when you do that, it makes a giant mess. And then Hasbro, who, like, you know, Wizards has a parent company that they get their funding from. It's not like they make their decisions, and Hasbro's like, well, you wasted all that money. You don't get more money until 5 years from now.
Okay, so let's moving on from Modo, because we only have a few more minutes on this before we get to talking about this awesome deck tech here. But I want to make sure we get a few more points talked about here. So the Modo conversation is one that has been brought up before. Now, card accessibility, if it's going to be, let's say we don't have Modo. I mean, the most prompt, like the Pro Tour is cardboard. So that is Magic's thing. That's what they want to go forward with. It becomes a different game if the Pro Tour is not held with cardboard cards. So if you're going to stick with cardboard, how do you make it so that the information on the cards is more accessible to the viewer? How do you make it so they're displayed in a better way or they're easier to understand? I mean, how do you do that?
I think, again, I hate to bring poker up again, but if they had those card reading tables and you just tell the pros every time you're on coverage, anytime you would draw a card, you would put it on the camera table or, you know, thing and then draw your card, it would help a ton, right? You could have note takers in the back, note take, you know, furiously what cards are in their hand,
right,
and relay that information to the casters, then suddenly the casters now have a full information and they know exactly what's going on.
Because it's almost that. You'll have the list on the left of the cards, mm-hmm, but sometimes they're a little slow.
Sometimes there are gaps, though. You know, sometimes I noticed this sometimes when I was watching some tournament, and sometimes they aren't sure because the pro immediately draws, and it's like, he's looking at the card now. What's going to be? And the commentators have no idea what to talk about anymore because they have no idea what he could have drawn, so they start, like, guessing, and it would have been way better if the guy had just, you know, done that thing, shown the note takers what the card is, and that way the commentators can actually talk about what's happening.
And I thought this was, and maybe that's the next step on these, and it's going to need another border update, and this is what they should have done, to be totally honest. The bottom of the black bottom of the card should be have something on it that a computer can read immediately pick it up. Like, they can easily do that. Like, the little shiny little ball in the middle could be a QR code. Or, like, Wizards version of a QR code that, like, when they pick their hand up, they scan it. It also helps with deck registration. Like, there's so many little things that can help.
Potentially, they could just do that now and develop their own cards that they just use for coverage that have those QR codes or whatever, right? So they don't need to be playing with their actual physical deck. The tournament organizer has just a pile of cards that have QR codes on them and hand it to them that are the list they need.
Or sleeves.
Yeah.
I know people that have Braille sleeves. If we can have Braille sleeves, you can have...
That's actually a really strong point. Is if Wizards was to invest in a QR code system with a sanctioned sleeve, and they would just be complimentary for a while, like that would just have to be an investment they gave out.
It would be... Star City Games would be kind of... They have to figure their own thing, but for GPs and especially Pro Tours, like, especially now that Standard is the only format of Pro Tours, Wizards could easily have two play sets of every card sleeved up in these things, then just have people knowing, oh, these are the matches. One thing, let's make a deck really quick. Like, I don't think that's impossible.
Like, for Limited and whatnot. And like
Limited and Standard. Like, Standard's easier than Limited. Limited, you have to, like, figure it out. But they have the deck list. They can figure it out. You know, I don't think that's impossible.
That's an interesting idea. All right, so if we're going to talk about the recognizability of cards, that's a pretty strong solution we've just come up with. So now we're talking about you're saving time. You're making it so that the casters have a better idea of what's there. I don't think that the best casters have done a bad job. I think they do the best what they can with Magic. I think that's just the nature of the game. I think that coverage could be improved. Like, the casters,
I think they're getting better. I do think the median age in general for all of Magic could probably be reduced a little bit.
Yep.
I do know that when my younger brother interacts with or has seen me watching Magic coverage, the first his first response ever was like, "Oh, why is it a bunch of old guys playing this game?"
And I'm just
like,
"They're old."
Yeah, right.
Because there's you have to be a master. Okay.
So then I think what would be the last? What would be sort of like the last of the major points to talk about here? I guess prize payout becomes the last one because that's the other biggest barrier. You see, a lot of the best players in the world, we've interviewed on this podcast, like a ton of the best players in the world. And a lot of those players have said the same thing to us, which is that, look, if you're playing this game to make money, you're playing it for the wrong reason. You play this game because you love it. It's not going to make you rich. A pro Magic player doesn't make very much money. That's just the way it is. And we've heard it over and over and over again. Andrew Brown just left competitive Magic after 7 Pro Tours in a row, his first 7 in a row, to go make Magic cards because ultimately the payout, the reason he didn't have a strong push to stay playing Magic. He wasn't making millions of dollars. It was like a decent living.
Right. Once you had 7 Pro Tours, like what's next?
Unless you're winning all of them. And he's top 8ed twice.
To talk about payouts a little bit, it's actually funny because Smash, so the other esports scene that I'm really familiar with is the Super Smash Brothers scene. And the payouts for that game are not great. And so it's kind of weird to me that people see esports as a venture to make money, because I think that if you talk to a lot of professional players about the game that they play, they do it for more so for the competition and the kind of glory of it rather than the actual monetary game. Because for a lot of other games that exist in esports, there's a force of personality that happens when you start winning tournaments and people, you become a recognizable face. You know, Owen Turtenwald is now a pretty household name amongst people who watch competitive Magic. And I think that one thing that Wizards probably could do more so than payouts is to kind of give more recognition to the players and let the players blow out their personality a little more, build out their, you know, social media, that sort of thing. Help them out on that front, because I think that in the end is where this sort of thing can be helped, because payouts, the money has to come from somewhere, and Wizards can't just arbitrarily increase the amount of money that everybody makes from playing this game, right? So I think that one of the kind of half steps towards that would be to allow pro players to kind of build their own fan base through Magic, and I think that's kind of missing, right? Like, we don't have enough household names in Magic. I think that in other games, there's tons of them. I don't know.
Well, and I think part of this is just something that is happening in esports everywhere, and Wizards is a little bit better. And like the kind of the point I like to always point out is, how many League of Legends websites are there, legitimate ones, like versus how many legitimate content creating with income stream Magic sites are there? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know anywhere to go to read League of Legends articles that aren't really forums that have been kind of, like, at best it's forums that have been upgraded a little bit. And sometimes there's stuff like MOBAfire or whatever there is now, and MOBAfire might be gone, but where you're like, oh, I'm looking at like the best way to kits for the character I'm playing with. But Magic has Star City Games, MTG Goldfish, GatheringMagic.com, MTG Salvation,
Channel
Fireball, TCG Player. And the reason that exists is because Magic is actually a hard item that you sell. Like, you can, the reason SCG can exist is because they make money from selling cards. So when it comes to actually abilities to make income off of Magic,
right,
I think Magic is above and beyond a little bit farther than most esports. And when it comes to being a professional player, the thing you run into is the thing that esports is running into, which is advertisers have started jumping on board, but they're not at MMA levels, they're not at poker levels, they're not at actual professional sports levels, because you're not getting these TV contracts or Twitch isn't paying out at the right amount of money for these streams. So you're not building an environment where you can start having a professional football league-like system. And League of Legends is probably closest there, or a few other games like League of Legends.
Yeah, other esports are kind of following and making their own leagues like that.
Right. And in all those situations, though, you know, you need sponsors. Like, that's where that kind of comes in. That's where Magic needs to come in. And if you're going to really get to that level, you need to, and it kind of complements your point of, if you build these Magic characters, which I do think Magic does an okay job at, like LSV has a name, like, you know,
he's like maybe some of the most recognizable.
Yeah, the better people who are better with their branding have established a brand.
Right.
But
Wizards needs to be better at helping people build those brands.
Yes, exactly.
And once you build enough of those characters, you'll be able to get them at least to get sponsors and advertisers behind them. And what Wizards could do is build an arm of
people that's job is to sell pro players to advertisers mm-hmm. versus having people trying to help kind of do that themselves. And that's where Wizards could do. Instead of Wizards giving them the money, they have a literal PR team that's job is, okay, Kibler, we want, you know, we don't want to lose you to Hearthstone. You're obviously a name that people follow. People love watching your stream. We want you to keep playing Magic. Let's hook you up with Ultra Pro or even better, Red Bull Monster.
Right.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Blah.
And so Super Smash Brothers has kind of been growing at a phenomenal rate recently. And one of the big things is sponsorship and how difficult it is in a game that is primarily played in person to do that. And when you play a League of Legends game or whatever, you have tons of things that you physically interact with. You have your mouse, your keyboard, your computer,
right.
All these things that have spaces for sponsorship. Magic kind of lacks on that front because generally you have like what a playmat, some sleeves, maybe
you have
but maybe
stores.
Shirts
yeah,
or
yeah.
something. You know, I'm not saying that it can't build and be built out, but I don't think anyone has even tried to offer. You know, like has any Magic player gone to you know Monster and be like, hey, I top 8 at a lot of tournaments. You know, this is the amount of people who watch me at these tournaments. You know, several a thousand, tens of thousands of people know my name. How much would you be willing to pay me to wear a Monster shirt on camera?
and for the most part, I like from a perspective of trying to contact these advertisers, it's really hard for a person out there by themselves to do that. But
yeah.
if Wizards has an arm that's trying to connect these people, they're an arm of Hasbro, that's a person who's going to have a better ability to kind of do that stuff. And I think that's really the answer to the issue.
We had an entire... Like,
well, it was in our trip from Vegas that we did an episode during the half, other half of that where we got lost in the middle of California desert.
Yeah,
we talked about exclusively.
We had like a 6-hour conversation of launching that business that was going to try to connect those players, and we even honestly started to even move forward with the plan until I can't remember why we got derailed. I think we found out somebody was doing it or something. But yeah, that conversation, that question is a great one, and I think that's. We've said it before, and it's probably...
I think it's because you need the cloud of Hasbro and Wizards. I think Wizards has to be the people that's helping these pros find these sponsors.
Yeah, absolutely. So
I think that's... I think let's move on to doing a brief breakdown of your deck,
yeah,
and then
okay.
we'll jump into that really quick. And
this is an MMCast. This is an MMCast style deck. This is so sweet.
All right, so... Why don't you describe the base minimum of the deck?
Yeah, so basically the deck is Teemer Delver, and I was largely inspired by this Modern Nexus thing when Bedlam Reveler came out and talking about how you can use Traverse to find it and all this stuff, and I was like, oh, that's sweet. I got to use that. And so Teemer Delver tempo. So basically I'm running 4 Delver, 4 Goyfs, and 3 Bedlam Revelers.
So for those who don't know, Bedlam Reveler is 2 red, 6.
Yes.
For a 3/4 with prowess, it costs 1 less for every instant or sorcery in your graveyard.
Yep.
And then when it enters the battlefield, you may discard. You discard your hand. You don't may. You have to. You discard your hand to, and then draw 3 cards. So if you have an empty hand, it is Treasure Cruise attached to a 3/4.
Yeah, and oftentimes with you know with blue red spell based decks, Delver decks, you're going to get 6 instant sorceries in your graveyard very very quickly. I'm running Thought Scars to make that even happen even faster, and so. Now that you're putting all these things in your graveyard, what other better way to, you know, utilize it than Goyfs and Traverse? Because
sure.
you hit Delirium really, really quickly also with all these cards. So the deck basically generates card advantage really, really quick through Bedlam Revelers, and you can start finding them and start chaining them together. That's my favorite part about the deck, where you get to a point where you just keep drawing more Bedlam Revelers and just drawing your entire deck and throwing card advantage into your opponent's face. It's really fun. I think one of the weirder things that I did with the deck was I added Disrupting Shoals into the deck. And so generally, Delver, at least in Legacy, you work on the axis of tempo. You want to utilize your mana better than your opponent can utilize their mana. Unfortunately, Legacy has better tools for that with like Wasteland, Days,
Force of Will.
But this is kind of my Force of Will because the cards you mainly care about in Modern are CMC 1 and 2.
Sure.
So Disrupting Shoal really can be such a huge tempo positive. Obviously, the part that a lot of people are uncomfortable with is the negative card advantage that Disrupting Shoal has when you know pitch a card.
And the swinginess of having the right card for it.
Yeah, but the thing is that a lot of that stuff gets made up for with the Reveler, because the Reveler generates a ton of card advantage.
Yeah,
for
you want to empty your hand.
Yeah.
Does Disrupting Shoal exile, or is it discard?
It exiles. It's unfortunate.
So, yeah,
it's a little bit of a non-bow there. But yet, it's still, I think...
I can see why it excels. Those cards would be maybe too strong. If they're also discard outlets.
If they were discard
outlets, I discard... well, I mean, this would be like a different one, but I discard Grizzlebrand, and now it's in my graveyard. Gore's Vengeance, I win.
Yeah. Oops, sorry.
Okay, so... the other card, I guess, is Traverse Dolenvald, and people might not know what that does. It's one green, you get to search your deck for a basic land.
Yes.
And then, or if you have Delirium, it search your deck for anything?
Creature or land.
Creature or land. Yeah. Okay.
It's not basic land. It's creature or land, which is a big deal.
Are you playing any sweet land targets?
No.
What about the Ghost Quarters? Weren't we just talking about?
I have seen some lists put Ghost Quarter in their sideboard.
Okay.
For, you know, I don't know, like Tron or something.
Eldrazi is an issue because of the...
Cavern.
So you need to be playing Ghost Quarter.
Yeah, so that obviously helps. I mean, in my board, I have 3 Blood Moons, so... Okay. That helps. Cavern of Souls. I hate you.
Well, I hate Blood Moon, so we're all...
disalignment there.
Yeah. So I guess, so why don't we walk through some of the big matchups in the format? Are there any kind of other tips and tricks or sweet cards you're playing before we jump into that?
I think that mainly covers it. I know that the MTG Salvation forums, they've been talking about the deck a lot, and a lot of them actually like the Reveler and Traverse in the sideboard and make it a transformational sideboard. So you start out with Hooting Mandrills instead. And basically, the reason for that is that Hooting Mandrills are traditionally really good against other aggro, linear aggro decks.
And right now the format's so aggressive.
Yes, exactly. And so you bring in the Reveler and the Traverse package when you're against something that's grindier, you know, against Jund and stuff, because the card advantage is obviously really a big problem for Jund.
Yeah, we've had conversations on here about how underplayed we think Hooting Mandrills really is. The big issue is that card comes up against... It doesn't rumble very well with a standard Goyf. Like, it's being a 4-5 to a 4-4 is not great. Tassigar being a pretty heavily played card recently, also a 4-5. In those days, Siege Rhino was a problem. It's not really a problem anymore.
Correct.
And, I think it's pretty solid. Like,
I mean, we live in a format now where Grimflayer is also kind of one of the main beaters, so being a 4-4 against Grimflayer is actually relevant now.
Yeah.
So, like, the format, and more importantly, Dredge is now a Tier 1... possibly Tier 0 deck in the format that is running around attacking you with a bunch of 3/3s.
Yeah.
So having a 4/4 in the ground is now a much more relevant factor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and speaking of Dredge, not exactly an amazing matchup for my deck, but... Right.
So let's start with the Gauntlet. Let's start with Dredge.
Yeah, so Dredge, obviously, one of the big problems is the fact that they just pull out so many creatures so quickly against you that you don't really get a chance to do anything against them. And your counter spells look really weak when they just start bringing stuff back from the graveyard. You don't really want to... Yeah, you just get overrun too quickly, I think, is a big problem. Like, the ways that I've won against Dredge is basically flying over them with an early flip Delver. And
you're running Snapcaster Mages, though, right?
I'm running one.
Only one.
So
okay.
Snapcaster Mage, a lot of people would think would be a shoe-in for any blue-red deck in Modern, but in this case, it ends up being a non-bow with Bedlam Reveler. So I usually like it as like a thing that I can search for with Traverse to, you know, maybe reach for the, you know, classic Bolt Snap Bolts type of ending.
What about Eternal Witness?
No Eternal Witness.
How many games do you find yourself often when you draw the Snapcaster being like, God, this is so sweet? Or is it like...
So I used to run more Snapcasters in the deck, and I realized that it makes for really, really awkward hand situations where you want to be playing the Reveler, but you have that Snapcaster in your hand, and then if you play the Snapcaster to pull a bolt from your graveyard, that now suddenly you can't cast your
the Reveler.
You get into really clunky situations if you run too many Snapcaster Mages, so I prefer just drawing into one or just having to search for it with my Traverse.
Because I was going to say Surgelic Extraction is kind of like the new tech out of Snapcaster Mage decks, because it, like... Two hits off of a Surgical Extraction completely wrecks Dredge.
Yeah. So in my sideboard, I run two Anchor of the Gods, and that's kind of what I would use
plan.
For them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I would think that, I guess, in a deck like this, because you want to get going with the Revelers and fill your yard before you would ever want to use your one Snapcaster, that by the time you actually use the one Snapcaster, it's way less relevant that it's 2 mana. So you may as almost well at that point be playing a one of Torrential Gearhulk in your deck rather than the Snapcaster, because it's like, what? Who cares if it's like efficient and a 2/1 if you're going to not play it till like turn 7 or turn 8 or something like that.
All right, next deck on the list. How's your Infect matchup?
Infect is actually probably one of the better matches for the deck. I think in general, people talk about this a lot, but tempo decks generally beat linear aggro. I think that's just kind of one of the archetype, you know, rock, paper, scissors thing. So, you know,
you have Lightning Bolt and ways to deal
with it. Yeah. So I have ways to, I have many ways to interact with, you know, stupid little infect creature that gets way too big for its own good, you know. So I think that in general, this deck does really well against stuff like Death Shadow, you know, big creatures. Zoo decks also struggle against. So Burn, though, is a little bit different because I am a three color deck, and I think Burn is a bit of a harder matchup. It depends. I think Burn's maybe 50-50. I think, but generally against linear aggro, I think this deck wins.
Wait, are you playing in your sideboard? Actually, this sounds really sweet in your deck. The gain 10 life if you have Ferocious.
Oh, Feed the Clans.
Yeah, Feed the Clans.
I am not.
Oh, I feel like you should be playing. Because you have Reveler, you have Reveler in play, and then or Bedlam Reveler, and then you play it, and then it gets the Prowse trigger, and then it triggers.
Ooh. Sweet.
And you have Tarmogoyf. Really, I feel like you're just going to trigger it. Yeah. There's your burn matchup right there.
I think a lot of decks do run that if they are running the Mandrills.
Sure.
Mandrills is such a like a guaranteed way.
The other two things are variable versus the Mandrills. Yeah, right. That makes sense. I guess we went burn. The control, the Grixis, Jeskai, /Jund, /Junk.
Yeah,
world.
So against those grindy matchups, this deck, the Bedlam Revelers is really what pushes it ahead. Obviously, Jund, king of 1v1, you know, just a 1-for-1 card, you know.
Killing your creature.
So they just want to 1-for-1 you the entire game, and it becomes really difficult when Bedlam Reveler keeps refilling your hand.
Sure.
And then you find Traverse, and then Traverse refills your hand again.
Yeah, a top deck Bedlam Reveler just is like, Thoughtseize, suck it.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, probably like those later game, I guess, because you're playing four of each, right? Four Reveler and four Traverse?
No. Four Traverses, but only three Bedlam Revelers, because they're worse for every extra one you draw when you have one in your hand.
So, but like there have to be mid-game situations where you've resolved one, you draw Traverse, and you're like, I'll just turn this into another one.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You just draw Traverse, play it, it makes the next one cheaper.
You're right.
Yeah, that's got to be so sweet.
Yeah, it's super hard to deal with. And Traverse, oh my god, that card is so ridiculous. You thought one Tarmogoyf was difficult, you know, the next turn you have two because you Traverse for the next one, you know. It snowballs out of control really bad, really hard. And Lightning Bolt looks really, really bad against this deck, especially post-board, because a lot of times you'll remove your Delvers, and so now you're just left with beefy creatures like Huntmaster of the Fells, Tarmogoyf, you know, things that Lightning Bolt doesn't exactly like to play against. And so... yeah, I don't know. I think that this it's especially good against these grindier decks.
Okay.
And then I think also the Tron matchup is pretty good, too.
Yeah, because the next card is like the big ramp decks of Tron and Titan Shift. And
yeah, so...
Even though Drazi, to a certain extent, ramps a little bit.
So Tron is actually, I think, a pretty good matchup. Delver puts a pretty early clock on them if you get it flipped, and you can kind of disrupt what they're trying to do. Again, disrupting Shoal in game one is actually pretty relevant because you can prevent them from, you know, expedition mapping. You know, you can
also, I mean, doesn't Bedlam Reveler counter Ugin with disrupting Shoal? Oh, no, you can't go because it has to be blue.
If only Bedlam Reveler was blue and red. But that would be such an amazing situation. They're trying to resolve a new Ugin and you counter with Disrupting Shoal.
You mentioned you were playing Simic Charm.
Yes.
Simic Charms.
I think Simic Charm is really good against other Goyf decks. So when you're running into other... you just want to make your Goyf bigger than theirs. You know, a lot of people run Mutagenic.
In your tempo, you dodge... removal spells.
Yeah, so that's another thing is it just does everything that your deck wants to do. It can add a faster clock because it can give a creature +3/+3. It gives your creatures hexproof when you're just trying to get in with a Delver and protect it. It can also bounce a creature that's hard for you to deal with out of the way. So, you know, we talked about how like Tasigur is kind of a problem for a 4/4. Well, when you bounce it and they already delved away their graveyard, it looks really silly. So, it's just really good.
I think last summer when I went to that PPTQ playing green blue merfolk with Collected Company, I think I played like 2 Simic Charms. It wasn't good in that deck, but but I love me some Simic Charm.
That's a deck that doesn't have to worry about things blocking.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I love Simic Charm. That card's great.
And it's also another way to pitch a CMC2 card to Disrupting Shift.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Titan Shift.
Titan Shift, not great.
Okay.
They work on an axis that you don't really... that doesn't really work out for you very well. I think that it is better when you are running the Mandrills and Stubborn Denial. I've seen that version of my deck.
Sure.
And I think that deck does better against Titan Shift. But suddenly a lot of your Disrupting Shoals look a lot weaker when they're trying to resolve Scape Shift, and you're like, I don't have a 4 CMC card in my deck. So
I can imagine also that with that deck, because it plays like big things that are beefy and scary, you probably interact like kind of early and you're like, okay, like I have my Delver and I'll just try to stay ahead of you. And then they're just like, you don't have anything to resolve anymore. And I play this thing that's way bigger than what you have.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God, cards look so bad compared to your cards.
Yeah. Then when they resolve like a Primeval Titan, you're like, oh, okay, what do I do?
That was the card that came to mind for me, where you just look at it, you just slump, and you're just like, I guess I have to like double bolt this. Yeah, or like, if I have it.
Do I bounce it and give them two more? Like, oh God, what do I do? Yeah. That's ugly.
I guess the last, and we talked about it a little bit, Bant Eldrazi.
Bant Eldrazi.
Your Blood Moon and Ghost Quarters.
but if you don't find those, it's
how bad is a reality smasher for you?
Unwinnable, probably. Yeah,
Reality Smasher. Unless if somehow you've managed to make your goys somehow bigger, you know, you get it to that class 5-6. If you can get it there, which you can, because I'm running Tar Fire, so I get the. My friend Wes would hate me because he hates the fact that Tribal is a subtype.
Oh,
just like, why is it?
It's not. It was a mistake. It was like the gimmick for that set. It's like energy or arcane. Like, you know, sometimes they try something and it doesn't really.
Anyways,
work.
That's a shout out to my boy Wes.
But also, like, how sweet is it that that like a single Tar Fire played like before blocks or something like that? If you have like a Goyf, just does so much. If you're targeting the creature you're blocking, it's like there's no way that it will survive your shock because you have a Goyf and it's trying.
It basically turns into a lightning bolt because you add basically 3 damage. So.
Yeah. All right. So before we jump into the kind of the end of the episode and the last bit on this deck, what would you say your worst? What deck do you want to least see across the table from you and the most?
Generally, white decks are a problem because a lot of people are running Graveyard Hate, and Graveyard Hate wrecks my deck. It's one of the reasons why I think this deck isn't like a tier 1, tier 2 deck, is that once Rest in Peace is out, a lot of the cards in my deck just don't have anything to do.
Yeah.
So. That's kind of a problem. I would want to see linear aggro against my deck. I think my deck does quite well against it. I also like playing against Jund. Don't want to see Dredge, which is a problem because Dredge is, you know, tier 1.
Dredge is everywhere right now.
For everyone who isn't in the room looking, Josh got really sad.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that this deck is tier 3 and, you know, maybe lower tier than that. But I think that the deck definitely has play, and I think that...
In the right format has a lot of potential.
I think in the right format, yeah. If we see something that's less graveyard, you know, like before Dredge became the big thing, like Affinity was kind of the bogeyman, mm-hmm. and my deck way preferred that. When everyone was stuffing in artifact removal and, you know, that sort of thing. Like, that was way better for my deck.
When the format was more, like, grindy control decks versus, like, very linear aggro decks, that was, or mid-range decks, if not mm-hmm. control decks, that was a little bit more your style of format versus right now where you have, like, one too many decks that are coming at you from just such drastically different angles in ways that are hard.
My deck does really well against certain axes of play and really bad on
Sure. Hey, Corey Burkhart just went undefeated until the finals with a Grixis deck that everyone said was terrible. So,
true.
Like, I would say this deck and the Grixis deck aren't that far off from each other.
Yeah.
And, like, the Grixis Delver deck just was one of the top 8 decks in this last weekend at the Modern event.
Out of the Delver decks that have been seeing a lot of success, the Grixis decks obviously are, you know, they're doing way better.
Well, yeah, because they don't need the graveyard, I guess, as much.
Yeah.
Well, kind of. All right, so that's it for... the deck, the episode, and everything else. I want to thank Josh. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Where can people find you? Where's some cool stuff that you're doing, and they can.
So you can follow me on Twitter, ZellTweets, that's pretty much the main thing that I do. I have like my Instagram. You can find all that on my Twitter, and then you can see me with Jimmy Wong. We do a show called All Chat, so you guys can check me out over there. And hopefully, we'll be doing more of those Commander reality TV Smash Cut things.
I'm excited to jump in on the next one.
Cool. I'm hoping to do more of that stuff. I'm trying to do more Magic related content, and I think eventually I'll be starting my own YouTube channel soon. So stay tuned for that.
Awesome. Ben, where can people find you?
You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
You can find me at Kes Wiley on Instagram, Facebook, everywhere. You can find us on Twitter at TheMMCast. Generally, that's a better place to argue about magic. My Twitter is relatively more politically focused.
Especially right now.
Especially right now. And you can find, more importantly, you can find the actual podcast on our YouTube channel, which is at the MMCast. Or no, it's not. That's a lie. It's youtube.com/topdeckingTV. You can find us at collected.company. And yeah, we'll see you guys next week. Next week we're going to be doing kind of a little bit more of a reduced. It's Thanksgiving, so we're going to do more of a thank you episode to all you guys. And it'll be a little bit shorter, but happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
See you later, alligator.